Live and local, this is Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. With over 200 combined years of sports coverage in Acadiana, this is a gathering unlike any other.
Well, every week this show looks better to me.
Every week your eyesight gets worse.
This is Five Guys Stories and Lies. Here's your host, Don Allen.
Thank you, and good evening, everybody. We all lost a friend today, as I'm sure you have, you're well familiar with by now. UL head baseball coach Tony Robichaud passed away today in New Orleans at the age of 57. He had suffered a heart attack. I guess it was this past weekend, was moved to Oxner's in New Orleans, which should have been a warning flag to everybody that was paying attention to it. I think it was to me, and I sort of dismissed it. I said, well, no, he's going to be fine. And unfortunately, he was not fine, and he passed away today. And while we lose a friend, a lot of you lost a good man. I don't know. We don't want to make this a complete eulogy kind of show. On the other hand, you know, those of you who have tuned into us for the last 10 months know that we've done everything we can to have a lot of fun. Have you know that we're having fun, and therefore you'd have some too, and be entertaining. And I can tell you this much, that will not be this show. Not tonight.
Nope.
Not tonight.
This is a tough one.
Yeah, it is.
This is a tough one.
And we're going to talk to some other people who have their own memories of Tony. And, you know, I'm trying to think of it. He died at 57, the same age my father was when he passed away. And it got me to thinking about it. I didn't know either one of them nearly as well as I wish I had. You know, I knew Tony, and I've known Tony for the 25 years he was here, as almost 25 years as head baseball coach, and you know, did a ton of interviews with him, watched a lot of his team's baseball. I know Glenn didn't work with him while he was a coach, but you worked with him a lot in your capacity as a State Farm agent.
Farm Bureau now.
Oh, sorry. Farm Bureau.
Yeah, but man, it was a blasphemy right there, man. No, Farm Bureau. No, he was one of my clients, but before that, he was I consider him a friend. I was from Crowley. He's from Crowley. His family's from Crowley. Timmy, the whole family. And, you know, to know him was to love him, because now, you know, I'm getting emotional. But
he was the kind of guy that if you met, you automatically considered him a friend after the meeting was over with.
Yeah. And he, you know, he would shoot it straight. And I admire people like that. He'd tell you like it was. And and the great thing about Tony is, you know, especially as a reporter or something, the TV and radio guys must have loved it. I know it's print we did, but, you know, especially the radio and TV guys, because I used to listen to his show on weekend mornings. And let me tell you something. You asked him one question, he's like Louis Cook. That ate up 20 minutes.
Exactly.
I mean,
exactly.
He,
it was
all
good 20 minutes.
It was a good 20 minutes. You know,
it was quality stuff.
Look, when I'd go to his house to go over his insurance stuff, you know, insurance took up 15 minutes, and the other hour 45 was talking about baseball, the draft, and life in general. And that's how it was. It was about life. Baseball was secondary, and that's what anybody knew him knew that. That, yeah, baseball was an end to a means, but, you know, he taught all those young men about life, and everybody he met, he taught about life.
You are going to hear that message, those of you listening. You're going to hear that a lot. You heard it today, I'm sure, on a lot of other shows. You're going to read it. You're going to read that very same message. And the reason is that it's true.
Oh. And look, I said it, he shot it straight. He didn't sugarcoat it. He told you like it was. And if you like he used to say, You know, I don't want those kids that come here with all those bottles of Gatorade. I want the guy who drinks out the garden hose. You know, he was that kind of guy. He was just down home, salt of the earth guy.
I remember one of the interviews I did with him when I was doing the television broadcast with Kevin Cantrell. And I was down on the field, and this was right before the TV, the interview was about to be recorded. And this was like 5-6 years ago. Maybe not that long. But anyway, the team was really struggling, was not very good, didn't seem to have a lot of heart. It wasn't like these last two seasons where they were short on talent, mm-hmm. but you could tell they had heart. They didn't seem to have that back then, and I remember saying to Tony, you know, what these guys good need is a good brawl to get them going. He said, I don't know if they'd fight.
That's bad.
But it was straight. It was straight, as you said. And he wasn't laughing when he said it. He said, I don't know if they'd fight.
You know, Glenn and I talked about that on the way over here today about any one of his former players or current players, for that matter, that you talk to, the conversation usually begins with what he did for them to turn their life around, what he has meant to them as a coach, in so much as helping him mature. And then if there's any time left, they talk about baseball. And I told Glenn, I said, Tony Robichaud was probably if not the only coach that I could sit down and listen to intently and get something out of, mm-hmm. without feeling like I've been led on to an unescapable place.
It wasn't paragraph after paragraph of coach speak.
Right.
It was not that.
But and I hope this doesn't sound the wrong way. It's almost like listening to your pastor or your preacher, because he was talking life experiences and how it relates to you as an individual.
I don't think that can, considering it's Tony we're talking about, I don't think that can be taken the wrong way.
You know, I mean, I'm not trying to be sacrilegious, I guess, is what I'm saying. But, no, I mean, that's not just the way, when he explained something, it was more than just, well, we didn't make the play and we made a bad throw to first. You know, I mean, I think one of the things you may have talked about this is he's mostly famous for was when he told, was it don't let a baseball game or baseball be your identity for the rest of your life.
YouTube. That speech is on YouTube, and a lot of them on YouTube.
It's incredible, man, to listen to his speeches, you know. If you don't get something out of it from a humanity standpoint, listening to what he did and what he says, I could have listened to him for hours. You know, just give the mic to Coach Robe and let him talk.
Yeah, I think one of his best quotes were, you know, that God's not going to ask you your batting average, how fast you threw. He's going to ask you if you were a good husband, if you were a good father, and if you were a good man. And they use that in the movie Saving Private Ryan at the end, where they go to the graveyard, tell me I was a good husband, tell me I was a good man.
That's when he's talking to the grave.
And that is I had to give a eulogy one time. And I did for my good friend, Dave Pettijohn. To me, if you can say yes to those, then you lived one great life. You can say yes for Tony Robichaud.
We are Five Guys, Stories and Lies. I'm Don Allen with Bruce Brown, Glenn Quibido, Bobby Ardwan, and Tom Brown. We will continue on the show. 706-0111. That is your number at the studios, and we would love for you to take part in it. This is a memory kind of show this evening. We'll be back right after this.
Raymond Park.
Now, back to Five Guys, Stories and Lies on 103.7 The Game.
Welcome back, everybody. It is Five Guys, Stories and Lies here on 103.7 The Game. For those of you that were unaware, and that's probably very few of you, UL baseball coach Tony Robichaud passed away today in at Ochsner in New Orleans. What I'm presuming are complications from the heart attack that he suffered this weekend and the ensuing surgeries. And that is our way of eulogizing him this evening on the show. We are thankful to have with us a young man who played for him back in the late 90s, 95 to 98, I think Bruce mentioned, and a man who was also my broadcast partner on the television telecast for Cajun baseball, Kevin Cantrell. Kevin, how are you?
We're making it. We're making it. It's a tough day. A really, really tough day.
Yeah, I know it, and it's great to talk to you again. I just wish it was under better circumstances.
Yeah, likewise. Likewise. I want to offer my thoughts and prayers to Colleen and Ashley and Justin and Austin and all the grandkids for their loss and their losses, all of our loss, this entire community. It's stunning that we're here today talking about a man that's not here anymore. It's unbelievable.
The stunning has almost moved into just depression now on what has happened. And I realize it's not anything that you know, obviously anyone could do anything about. And you have got to, within your own mind and your own faith and what you believe in, to come to grips with what has happened. Kevin, what was your first thought? And this is probably a very unfair question. What was your first thought when you heard of the heart attack?
My first thought was, it didn't surprise me, mainly because, I work in the cardiovascular space. It's what I do for a living. We actually help fix hearts for a living. I know he had a family history of his mom, I believe, had cardiac issues, and so maybe his father as well. So it didn't surprise me that he would maybe have. I know that sounds really crass, Coach Robe is, coaching college baseball is a very stressful position and a stressful occupation. And so I don't want to say it was a surprise, but the complications thereafter is what was a surprise. It was just one of those freak kind of deals,
You know, I talked about it at the outside of the show. You know, moving from here to Ochsner should have raised a stronger warning flag than it did. And it raised one for me, but I talked myself out of it and said, no, they're just being sure everything's going to be okay. And I'll bet a lot of people thought the same thing.
Well, I did. You know, I think I was hoping for the best. The move to Ochsner you could look at it as, I think, like you said, what I know about Ochsner is that it's a transplant facility. And so that's what I was worried about. But what I was hoping for was that, in a day and age where medicine has moved, advanced so much that when patients have heart attacks or even when they have open heart surgery, the rehabilitation is pretty rapid. They get patients up and about really fast. And I was hoping that it was the rehabilitation that they wanted a different scene. That was what I was praying and hoping for would be the difference. Obviously, I didn't have any information about nobody had any information about his condition. All we had was what was being delivered to us. So, but it turned out obviously to be a whole heck of a lot worse. You're right. We're all just coming to grips with this and dealing with it and remembering the man. I mean, what a wonderful man. What a wonderful man.
Kevin, this is Glenn Corbett. What is your most memorable moment from being around Tony? Lessons he taught you.
I haven't really had a chance to think about that a whole lot. I'm sure I will. And to me, it's the totality of the man. There are stories like I can tell you stories And there are some funny stories, and I think a lot of people don't really get to see the light side of Tony, like I think a lot of his players did. I can't believe that that's even coming out of my mouth, but the reality is it's the personal. We're talking about a man that walked the walk, or I should say walked the talk. All of that, you know, what he said is what he did. And it's all those things that that encompasses him. The fact that he's a servant leader, you know, the fact that, you know, what he's done to help us all become better people. It makes me a better husband, a better father. I mean, the fact that I have a family of five right now. I mean, I owe all of that to Tony Robichaux. I mean, he's been with the exception of my parents and my own family, the most influential person in my life. And that's what we think about him as a player. I mean, as players that played for him. So I don't think I can really isolate a story. I mean, the guy didn't like to fly. The guy liked Watermelon Dream ice cream. The guy was a very picky eater. you know, I mean, these are the things that a lot of people don't maybe know about him. I love hearing the stories that I've heard from people and following on social media. Everybody remembers him beyond being a baseball coach, which he was a great baseball coach. This is not about him as a baseball coach, because that was the impact on the people that he interacted with. Baseball was such a minuscule part.
Yeah.
It was so much more than that. It was, you know, and that's how he's going to be remembered. But you know, you can just look at this community. I mean, the loss of Tony Robichaux for the university, for the city of Lafayette, for the entire Cajun culture. There's a vacuum now in terms of leadership with his passing. That's what he means to me. That's what he means to this community. His footprint has been certainly remarkable.
Your brother Lee played for Mike Bollinger for UL. Your son Hayden plays for the Cajuns. How did he take it?
Him and I spoke earlier today. He took it hard. I had heard some news. I'd gotten texts. I've probably gotten close, you know, several hundred texts today, from people, players, and some of them, when the news first started to break, were from people that didn't want to believe it. And the one that made me believe it was the one I got from Hayden. When Hayden sent me the text, that's when I believed it. And so, he had gotten a phone call from Coach Wells, I believe, and then I called him back, and now we both cried, and he took it. You know, it's tough. I think for him, you know, he's up in Massachusetts, and he's trying to do his thing, and you know, but it's hard, you know, to being a 20-year-old kid and being away from home. And you know, he lost his mother when he was, you know, 9 or 10 years old. And so this is sort of like deja vu for him. It's been tough, but you know, he's a strong kid and a very resilient kid. This too shall pass. And he's out right now as we speak. They're playing up there in Cape Cod right now. They got a game going right now. So, you know, he's doing his thing.
Bruce?
Kevin, when you were playing for the Cajuns, y'all had the breakthrough season where you established kind of a winning posture there, and you know, they were in the World Series a couple of years later. What do you recall about that turnaround year that where y'all found your game?
You know, I think, you know, it's crazy. It's just the weirdest thing. You know, chemistry, make a good team great, make a great team average. There's your Robism. That's what I remember about 1997. That was a quote that I remember him saying. You know, we finished sixth as a my freshman year, 95. We finished third in 96. And we felt like we had a good group in 97, even though we were still short scholarships because of the probation, you know, from the previous coach. So we felt like we had good chemistry. We really did. I think we had a little swagger about ourselves, which I think helps. You know, Coach Robe, a lot of times he talks about it, and I think it's always maybe, or, you know, it can be viewed, you know, in a negative light. He talks about arrogance, and he uses that in a very positive way, really in a confident way, in a swagger. And that team in 97 had swagger, and I think that's what sort of propelled really the program, where the program was. I mean, Coach Bollinger, and my brother played for Coach Bo, and I was, you know, I watched that fairly closely as well. Coach Bo had some wonderful teams. I mean, some outstanding, fun teams, and now, those teams had swagger.
Yeah, you know, there was a sure. team with swagger.
That, yeah, was that really swagger? What was
yeah.
that? That lead to that probation?
Yeah. well, yeah, that's a different animal. But when I think Papo Ramos when I think swagger, right? I think Gary Haught when I yeah. think swagger. You know, we're talking, you know, guys that you know, we're tough guys. The guys that, you know, I think you have guys that developed into that. I think you had guys like Nathan Nelson that sort of developed out of that.
Coach, yes.
You know,
yes.
Tony talked about that. You know, Tony coached against those teams when he was at McNeese. And he always would say how much he looked at those teams. Well, you talked about Papo Ramos, and he talked about the Gary Haughts and the Damian Grossies and the Ken Myers and how tough those guys were. That he had to play against at that time. And I think he carried that attitude as a coach into the early years of us, and we sort of embraced that. And it sort of, you know, I mean, look, I've said it before, and I think, you know, Tony Robichaux is Raging Cajun baseball now. I think this program, you know, not from a win-loss perspective, but the program itself, where you're selling 4,000 season tickets and you're putting, you know, 3,000, 3,500 butts in the seats. I mean, that's a Tony Robichaux. That's the other things that have come for the program. You know, such, you know, just what he's done for the baseball program, for the university and the community is, you know, I mean, he's a legend. He just is.
We're talking with Kevin Cantrell, who played for Tony Robichaux back in the late 90s. Kevin, when he would gather you guys in a circle in the outfield after a game, win or lose, what was he telling you?
You know, it's funny. I mean, it was a lot of things. You know, I mean, sometimes it was very quick. You know, sometimes if we got beat by 9 or 10 runs, he wouldn't say anything. He just walk in there and we'd just kneel down and go straight to prayer. That was it. In other words, nothing to be said. And if things need to be said, he would stand up and he would say it. You know, Tony was a big preacher. You know, he always was teaching. And so a lot of times when if there were things that happened in the game that needed to be addressed by the team, that was the other thing about Tony, too. You know, no, there were no secrets. You know, he always believed that we were family, and in family there were no secrets or there was no sugarcoating. And so if there was something, if someone made an error or somebody, you know, didn't get a bunt down, he was quick to call you out. I mean, he knew it. He did it in front of everybody. And so it was that accountability that he put on you. And so it was all those things. I mean, it depends on how the game went. But, you know, it was sometimes, I mean, I heard him, you know, I remember after a game where we got beat, I don't even remember who, you know, these are the things, I don't remember the teams, but I remember him coming into the huddle and saying, you know, Mama said there'd be days like this. We got beat by 10 runs or something. And that was it. And we went straight to prayer. That was it. A lot of things, yes.
One more question before we go to break. Did he ever jump your butt?
Sure. Sure. Absolutely. I mean, Coach and I, we've had, I think that just happens in the course of playing. I mean, I remember being showing a lot of negative emotion, when I was struggling both my sophomore and junior year. And again, there was no sugarcoating, and we were family. So there was no pulling you aside and having a conversation. So, I mean, he called me out in front of the whole team about having negative emotion. And again, that's the accountability piece that came with it, you know. And then there was some back and forth. I mean, the one thing about Tony that you respected as a player is as I became older and became more of a regular player and was a leader and a captain, then I could give it back to him a little bit, and he liked it. He liked the fact that as a player you gave it back to him, and you could do it publicly. You had to do it with respect, but I think he liked to see you fight. That was part of the thing too. So. But yeah, I mean, I think everybody. There was times where he didn't have favorites. I mean, he was a pretty straight and narrow guy, and if he needed to be addressed, he addressed you.
Is this conversation going okay for you?
I know, this conversation here?
Yeah, I know you were a little iffy about it at the start.
Well, I just I'm fine. I'm good with it. You know, it's probably more cathartic than everything. And I think for me. As soon as the question was asked to me, I was not in the mood. And then I remembered I can hear a voice in the back of my head saying, "Do what's right, not what's expedient." So, I think people need to know the man he was and the legacy he's left, and that is going to live on. And so I think that sort of trumped my initial feeling in a moment. But yeah, this is I'm fine.
Good, Kevin. If you don't mind, we're going to take a short commercial break, keep you for a couple more minutes, and then we'll let you go.
Okay.
All right. Sure. Kevin Cantrell is our guest here in this segment of the show. Five Guys, Stories and Lies continues after this.
We're here to tell it like it is and how it was. This is Five Guys Stories and Lies on 103.7 The Game.
We're back on Five Guys Stories and Lies. Tony Robichaux, UL baseball coach, winningest coach ever in the program's history, passed away today at the age of 57 at Auctioner in New Orleans following complications from a heart attack. We have been talking with one of his former players, Kevin Cantrell, for about the last 20 or 25 minutes, and we're going to spend a couple more moments with him before he is allowed to go back and do the rest of his life that we interrupted.
Well, he probably wants to watch his son's game and listen to his son's game if his son's playing right now in Cape Cod.
Do you get that on TV, on the computer, Kevin?
We do. Actually, the game today actually is on TV. It's on actually Fox Sports. Oh, but yeah. I see enough baseball. Trust me. Being a dad, of a college baseball player, I also have a 11-year-old too. We see enough baseball, and I say this all the time. It's not as fun as you might think it would be to have a kid playing college baseball. It can be it's pretty nerve wracking.
Oh, I'm sure it is.
But come on,
there's nothing better than watching your son play baseball.
There's nothing better than watching your son succeed playing baseball.
You're right. The failures hurt.
The failures, it's tough.
You're right.
Kevin, this is Tom Brown. I wanted to kind of touch on that with you earlier when a couple of guys had asked you. You've got such a unique perspective as having been both a player and a dad, and everything in between there as a fan and a supporter and being close to the coach and everything. I think it's pretty hard a lot of times for people outside of this community to understand what Tony Robichaux and this program was compared to maybe some other places where, hey, he's the head baseball coach and we'll go to the game tonight. But it's such a family-type atmosphere playing in this program, is it not?
No, it is. It is family. I mean, that's what it is. That's the internal culture that's been put into the players, from the coach and staff. But it also exudes, in the stands with the fan base. You know, I mean, look, every fan base has a variety of different types of people. Obviously, you have the loud ones that are always, you can never please. And then you have, the ones. But what I always tell my wife, we sit in the grandstand on the third base side, and I always tell my wife, all this stuff you hear about, you see on Facebook sometimes or whatever, social media, about some of the negative. I said, look at all these people here. Look at this. You could see a couple, a family of four or five. You know, they're here for the family enjoyment of it. And you know, it's interesting. And this is what a lot of people, this is some more of the inside, stuff here. But, Tony always told us as players that we're in the entertainment business.
Yeah.
And we our job is when the man or the woman or, they come home from work and they've had a tough day at work. And maybe the hustle and bustle of life is burdening. They want to go and watch their team succeed and win, so that at the end of the day, that's what they got left. They want to see their team win, and so it's our job to provide that smile on their face by working hard and playing hard and winning. And so he didn't shy away from that. I mean, it was not about that. We were in the entertainment business, and so you could see it in the fan base. You could see the way all the things, the way the ballpark has been built for fan enjoyment, and it's that's what he built. It's Tony Robichaux. It's what he has put into this program.
Well, from that explanation and that answer, it's quite obvious you played and were influenced by Tony Robichaux. Quite obvious, because that sounded like a Robichaux answer.
Well, I was. I mean, there's no doubt.
It would have lasted five more minutes.
Kevin, one more question for you.
Yeah.
Where does the program go from here?
That's a great question. I don't know. I don't even know if I even want to speculate. I don't know if I can speculate. It's
too early.
I'm sure it's not too early for Dr. Maggard, and for the athletic department. I'm sure it's not too early for the players. It's not too early for the for the coaches that are on staff right now. I think there's a lot of, obviously there's coaches on the staff that I think are qualified and would need to be considered, I would think. I don't even know. I mean, I think you, when you lose a guy, objectively speaking, when you lose a guy that was so pivotal in pitching, to me, you have to be able to, supplant somebody in here that can provide leadership and experience with pitching. So that, to me, the first thing, if you look at it from the staff standpoint, Coach Wells has done a great job, a remarkable job, and the players love him from a standpoint of hitting. So I think that part's covered. Coach Babb provides, leadership from his experience of being here for so long. Does that mean you take one of the other folks on staff and promote them, or does that mean you look to the outside? I don't want to speculate, but I think all those things, there definitely needs to be someone to fill the vacuum from a pitching standpoint at the very least at this point. But when do you make those decisions? I couldn't even begin to guess, And wonder how long that'll take.
Kevin, this is Bobby Ardoin. I was wondering if you had one life lesson to take away from your experience with Tony, what would that life lesson be?
If I had one out of, an infinite number, I would say, you know, and I would probably say sign your work. He would say that a lot. You know, he would always say sign your work. And this is one of those things that talked about how baseball reflects on life. I find myself telling my kids this all the time. Sign your work, essentially. You know, I asked you to, you know, cut the grass, but you didn't bother to, you know, to weed eat along beside the house. You need to sign your work. You need to take pride in what you do, you know. Sign your work, get the bunt down. These are the things that we learned as players that I take with me all the time. I try to sign my work. Sometimes I'm not as good at it and I fail, but I think about that voice in the back of my head. You know, sign your work.
Kevin,
so I would say that.
Kevin, we cannot thank you enough for taking the time on what is a very difficult occasion to talk with us. I look forward to talking with you again, but hopefully in happier circumstances.
Certainly. Thanks for having me, guys. Y'all take care.
Thank you, Kevin.
Thank you. It's Kevin Cantrell, who played for Tony Robichaux from 1995 through 1998. Was an outstanding player, as was his brother before him, Lee, who played for Mike Bollinger and hit some of the longest home runs you've ever seen. And now Caden Hayden, who's at shortstop, or was it shortstop for Tony, and will be at shortstop apparently for someone else for the next year or two. And he's up right now in the Cape Cod League playing. We are going to take a break here. This is Five Guys Stories and Lies. If you'd like to be part of the program, it's 706-0111. That's the number at the Ardco Equipment Hotline. And we'll continue after this.
The viewpoints heard on this program could be considered politically incorrect.
Good thing they're too old to care.
Well, that's easy for you to say.
This is Five Guys Stories and Lies on 103.7 The Game.
That's your number at the studios. Tony Robichaux passed today at the age of 57. The UL baseball coach was the winningest coach in the school's history. Also the winningest coach in McNeese State history before he came here. And Bobby was informing us earlier that you've covered him for about 40 years, all the way back to American Legion.
Yeah, I was on my first tour with the Daily World. I was covering Legion, and Tony and his twin brother, Tim played for Crowley. And it was really kind of funny because when one pitched, the other played shortstop and vice versa. And so in the league, in the district in that year, there were three sets of twins. There was a set of twins from Eunice, Terry and Tony Bow, Tim and Tony, and there were two. There was a set of twins from either Vilplatte or Mamou. Imagine that. And so I decided to do a story.
You have to know the story behind that.
So
we don't want to know the story right
no,
now.
No, you don't.
So I decided to do a story on all the twin brothers in the district, and that's where I met Tony and Tim, and they were a wonderful interview, as I remember then. And then Tony went on to play for McNeese, and I think his final year he played here at UL.
2 years, I think.
And then this afternoon, one thing I didn't know, I was talking to Tommy Tate, who was the former head coach at McNeese, when Tony got the head baseball coach there, the baseball coaching job, and he said, man, he said, Tony was really young when he got that job.
Yeah.
And so I asked Tommy Tate, I said, Tommy, did that surprise you? He said, oh, no. He said, we could see right then that this guy, meaning Tony, was something special. I said, even the people in the McNeese administration, they didn't have any issues with that. Oh no, he said they definitely wanted him.
He was the youngest head coach, D1 head coach in college at that point. It was early 20s when he became the head coach over there?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. He's also the guy that his team knocked USL, out of their first regional in 88, I think it was. Tony was the head coach at McNeese and knocked them out. And then Nelson Sexsnyder was smart enough when he needed a head coach to go get Tony, with everything that Tony brought to the table, being local, being a winning coach, being a motivator like he was.
One of Nelson's best hires.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, Glenn, I don't know if you remember this. I do. As we were standing in the parking lot after one of the UL games, football maybe, and they were getting ready to select the head coach, and I think Nelson might have told us, it's like off the record, this is who we're going to hire. What do y'all think? And it's like, dude, you better hire this guy.
Yeah.
And this was, of course, before the word dude was popular.
Look, you know what? I promise tonight I will be nice to him and not say, you know, what I normally tell him. Why did he have to say that like that? We couldn't go through a whole evening without him being sarcastic for somebody saying something.
I wasn't being sarcastic. That
yes, you were.
True.
Well, you didn't have to say that. You didn't need to say that.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, weren't you trying to embarrass the man?
No, I'm trying to get you started.
Oh, no, not tonight. I promise I wouldn't. Nope.
You can drop your chain to a certain level.
If you think I'm going to call you a jerk tonight, I'm not. I promise I'm not going
to
call you a jerk.
He inspires Glenn to confrontation.
I just can't believe somebody was concerned about embarrassing me. It's like, what?
Bob, I got to look after you, man. I got to have you back. I mean, we goodwill partners, man. I mean,
oh, that's something to put on your
movie. No, we could do a new version of Goodwill. We call it Goodwill Shopping.
Goodwill Shopping.
Oh, Lord.
You know, and somebody said,
this must be a serious show.
I think it was actually you said it when I asked the question of Kevin, and I really didn't expect a deep answer from him. Where does the program go now?
You know, I'm of the opinion, you don't even talk about it right now.
Yeah.
There's no rush to do a darn thing.
And I'm not asking for a decision.
No, but I don't think anybody should even be thinking about that. And Kevin said, you know, Maggot's thinking about it. Well, yeah, that's his job. But really, you know what? Put it on the back burner for a week. Nothing's going to happen.
It's going to be on his front burner, but he's not going to be talking about it.
Yeah, you're not going to be talking. He's not going to be talking about it until well after the funeral.
Sure. But, you know, we're all discussing, like, okay, so what are they going to do, you know, for the funeral and stuff? And we've all agreed, you know, they really, there's not, like Bobby said, they ain't a church can hold that.
No.
They really need to consider somebody over there at UL. And talking to the family, maybe having it at the Cajun Dome.
I'm sure some ideas have been thrown around.
I hope so. I hope so because there's a lot of people that are going to want to go.
No, you're absolutely right.
And if they have it at the church in Crowley, trust me, I go to that church. There ain't enough room.
Oh, no.
All right? There's not enough room. Not close. So
St. Michael's can't hold them.
Nope, St. Michael's can't hold them.
I can tell you one thing that the program can get accustomed to, and, you know, from the totality of Tony Robichaux, like Kevin Cantrell said, there's not going to ever be another Tony Robichaux.
There may be
someone that comes in there and does a good job or does something different, but they're not going to find another Tony Robichaux.
Well, you know, it's like saying, you know, somebody's going to come in and replace Skip Bertman. Nope, afraid not.
Nope.
Nope, that wasn't going to be done. And same thing with Tony. That's the kind of personalities they had to lead a program there's no replacements for those
guys. And where
he
took the baseball program over his 25 years is just absolutely incredible.
Just drive by the complex any day.
Beautiful.
Just look at that ballpark.
Beautiful.
I'm hoping one day we may see that as Robichaux Park.
Yeah.
I really am.
That and the people he turned out.
Huh?
You know, it's his legacy.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me tell you something. If somebody hasn't done it yet, you need to go on YouTube and pull up Tony Robichaux and watch his speeches. I did this afternoon. I watched two or three. I shared one on Facebook. And I'm telling you, you listen to him, you just mesmerize listening to him speak the truth and speak about life. And again, baseball's secondary, man, and about values, where this country's going, where parenting is going, where it has gone, and things like that. And, you know, you watch those videos, and you have the utmost respect for that man if you never knew him in your life and you watched him. I mean, it's like, you know, in some cases, like watching a Billy Graham deal. The guy speaks the truth, and you can't help but get emotionally attached to Tony Robichaud.
I think, Tom, one of the problems you're going to have is, you know, Teague Moore deserves to have his name somewhere. The Russos probably deserve. I think you do something like you name it Tony's Turf.
Well, you have to do something.
I think that's coming. I think that's coming. Yeah.
It's already Teague Moore Field. So, you know, kind of like you have Yvette Girard Field at Lampson Park.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I'm not trying to alienate anyone like the Russos or anyone else, but we're talking 25 years of building that place to what it is. He needs to be in some way. His name needs to be
Tony's
involved
Turf
in that.
Is right there.
Yeah, Clint has something.
Well, no, I'm just saying I wouldn't be surprised if that kind of gets a little bit of a sped up. The process gets sped up a little bit with this kind of situation. Tony Robichaud Field might wind up being where we're at, because I think Russo Park, I think the naming, it's a whole rigmarole with the naming rights. That's something to kind of talk about.
Yeah, that's a legal thing right now.
Yeah, so that's something to talk about down the road, but I'm almost certain Tony Robichaud will be honored, probably be...
But that's what I said, at some point in time.
Have 36 put alongside the Ron Guidry numbers that they have retired out and out field, so I think it's just going to happen really quickly.
You know, we were talking about entertainment a while ago and stuff, and, you know, I think anybody will tell you, you know, just him having that cooking club over there. I mean, every team that came in here just couldn't wait to come back here. One of the things was the cooking club. I think they looked forward to that more than they did maybe coming to a Mardi Gras, because that cooking club, and that was Tony and all his guys that he set up. I mean, it was an amazing place. It is an amazing place, and he created it.
One more break we need to take. We've got Astros baseball coming up at 7:10, about 13 minutes from now. Who are they playing tonight?
Rockies.
Wow.
The Rockies?
Rockies.
Oh, wait. Oh, wow. The heart was beating hard again. The Rockies. Okay.
Only yours.
Yankees must have lost. He doesn't have his hat on tonight.
Yankees lost last night. Had that home run streak.
I tell you that was the reason why he didn't have that hat on.
Didn't I tell you that was going to happen after that London trip? They weren't going to do a darn thing.
The Yankees relievers copied the Mets relievers last night.
We gotta go. Go get it.
Take a break. Be back.
Live and local, this is Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. With over 200 combined years of sports coverage in Acadiana, this is a gathering unlike any other.
Well, every week this show looks better to me.
Every week your eyesight gets worse.
This is Five Guys Stories and Lies. Here's your host, Don Allen.
We have a couple of minutes left of this evening's show, so somebody suggested we go around the horn. Okay, we'll do that. We can talk about the NBA.
I don't think so, not.
Okay, that's enough. Let's talk about the Yankees. Here's a stat Tom alike.
You said Yankees, that's enough.
Here's a stat Tom alike. They had their home run streak stopped last night by the Mets at 31. During those 31 straight games with hitting a homer, the Yankees hit 56 home runs. The Yankee pitching gave up 56 home runs.
Needs a little work.
That's not good.
Needs a little work.
Yeah.
You're starting to be like these other radio shows.
That's what I was about to say.
Entirely too many.
You want to hear stats? Listen to let's talk about
Lady Cajun
before
softball.
Six.
All right, let's talk.
What
about
you want?
It. What do you want to talk? What do you want to know?
You weren't waiting for that, huh?
What do you want to know?
No,
no. We're going to sound like every other station. So go ahead and talk about softball.
Okay.
No, when we talk about it, we don't talk about the X's and O's and the batting averages and stuff. We don't talk about that kind of stuff.
Now, you talk about portals.
You want to go there?
No.
Do you really want to go there?
No.
We don't have time tonight. No. We're not going into portals.
What are they talking about, Bobby, Bruce?
Portalettes, I think.
Oh, okay.
it's portals.
No.
Fantasy football starts up in a couple of months. I'm looking forward to that.
Good. I'm happy for
you. How many teams are you going to have, Tom?
Five. I cut it back to five back 2 years five. Ago. I just couldn't keep up with the 30 I was in.
You guys got no life, man. I'm telling you.
Golly. I'm only in one, but it's a biggie.
You're gonna have to come to my house. I got beer in my Coke machine.
Good,
you
man.
Come.
Good.
You know,
Tom never mentioned to everyone while or a little bit earlier. His first meeting with Tony Robichaud was when Tom was an umpire, and he threw Tony out of the game.
He tossed him. Yeah.
Well, it was in my previous
life.
You
tossed him.
Yes, that was in my previous life when I was, taking my way into college umpiring, and Tony was the McNeese coach, and his second baseman got upset with an out call I made at second base, with a safe call I made at second base. And I didn't get into it. He told me what he thought, and I said, okay, I've listened to you now. That's enough. And then he cursed me out, so I tossed him. And then Tony came out and introduced himself to me. You know, I'm Tony Robichaud. I'm the head baseball coach at McNeese. And that was the most ridiculous call I've ever seen in my life. You know? And I went, well, thank you, coach. I've listened to you. And that's enough.
Well, I didn't think I could have any more respect for Tony until I heard that. Now I have a lot more respect for Tony because he knows him. He calls him as he sees him. Tom, I told you that.
Exactly.
Told you that.
The replay showed that I was correct.
They didn't have replay back then, Tom. He's going to lie on the air. When was that, like 1988? They didn't have replay.
1624.
We promised we'd never hang up on people. We never promised we would not lie.
That's true.
Yeah, oh, well, yeah but
this
we
is
can
five guy stories.
But we can cut. Yeah, but we can cut his mic. My replay showed that my call was right.
Little did I know at that time that I was talking to the guy who would become the guy we all have come to know and love. You know,
yeah.
And it's like, you know, like you talked about him being young. He was just a young head coach at McNeese.
Yeah,
you know? And I'm like, yeah, you're not coming out of the dugout and yelling at us.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah, right. Yeah. Because you were 9 years older than him, Tom. Right.
When he came out the dugout in these latter years, he came out for a purpose. Sometimes, you know, I remember the LSU game, the brawl at LSU and all that stuff, man. That
oh, you mean the bat throwing and all
oh,
that?
Oh, that
it
was
didn't
great.
Turn into a brawl, but there was definitely
yeah,
some
was,
hard
yeah.
feelings.
Oh, was it hard feelings? And now, you know, I mean, patch everything. I heard Maneri, you know, Maneri was real heartfelt talking about the
yeah,
situation was, prior.
Made some
prior
great statements.
Yeah, he did, you know, because they all have a lot. And Skip Bertman had all the respect in the world. Still, I mean, has all the respect
you're
in the world.
You're going to find it almost impossible to discover someone who did not have all the respect in the world.
Oh,
for sure.
Absolutely.
All those things that Kevin was talking about, the negative stuff, that's, you know, that's not the people that are around the program day in and week
and they're
in
not
and
talking
out.
About Tony.
No,
they're just talking about
wins and losses.
Exactly.
All they're talking about.
Exactly.
You know? And that's unfair, but it's part of the game. I understand it. You know, they're upset, but they didn't know him like some people are, like us knew him, you know,
and
they're all probably
and
closer
there,
than
there
me.
Are other people, of course, who knew him so well that they told him things that they didn't even tell his he didn't even tell his family.
That's true, you know. I mean, no, imagine being that special.
Yes.
Now you know what I once said,
and making it about yourself rather than
I'll perish
the
that
true
thought.
Tragedy.
Perish that thought.
Yeah,
y'all get off of that. Listen, I once said that Nelson Stokely was the best coach I ever worked with. I've got to correct that. He's one of the two best coaches I've worked with. Tony Robichaud is right there with him. That's how much respect I had for Tony Robichaud.
Wait a minute. When you say worked with, you mean from
as a journalist and
as
a coach.
From a journalist point of view.
Yes. And then also knowing him, having the privilege of knowing him, being from Crowley. You know, he was just one of those special people that come along that are able to touch so many hearts and souls. And that's what he's all about. That's his legacy.
My two in...
It's not baseball.
Some. You were a journalist? I thought you were in the insurance business.
I was a writer.
My two would be two of Glenn's favorites.
What?
Well, there would be, and I'm leaving Tony out of the discussion for this.
Okay.
My two would be Bollinger and Marty Fletcher.
Wow.
You noticed the quietness on my mic.
Yeah. Well, you're talking from a journalist point of view and working with somebody and being able to talk. Yeah. Once you got to know Marty, he was that kind of guy.
That probably explains.
Did you get to know him, Bruce?
That probably explains. That probably explains a lot more about Don and what we have to put up with
right.
for 2 hours on a Wednesday night, huh?
Well,
but those were his two favorite coaches.
Well, hopefully next week we have something much better to talk about.
Well, you will have said something dumb by then. We can get on you.
Oh.
We got to
man.
Our producer,
we learned a lot tonight.
Our wizard behind the curtain is giving me the heads up. That's Clint Domang. So for Bobby, Bruce, Tom, Glenn, I'm Don. Five Guys, Stories and Lies, 2 hours next week at 6 o'clock.